How Do I Love Thee? Let Me Count the Ways. For HarperCollins, who announced the purchase this week of romance publisher Harlequin, the ways certainly added up. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. As the New York Times noted, 24 of the 100 best-selling fiction books in North America for the last week in April were Harlequin titles. As recognizable as the brand is in our own local bookstores and supermarkets, Harlequin is a definitively global brand. In the digital age, though, does $415 million buy HarperCollins publishing happiness? For the answers, we turn to Publishers Weekly senior writer Andrew Albanese, who joins us each Friday with the review of the week's news in books. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So indeed, it does seem to be deal season in publishing. And this week, we've seen a number of big deals. The biggest of all was the HarperCollins acquisition of Harlequin. Tell us more about that.
Well, you are right about that. The pace of merger and acquisitions has certainly picked up in the publishing industry. Starting a week ago, when we learned that HarperCollins had indeed acquired a romance publisher, Harlequin. Harper's going to pay $415 million for the company, which publishes about 110 books a month. That's an impressive number, all in the romance category. And Harlequin is also perhaps one of the strongest independent brands that I know of in publishing. And for me, one of the key things to watch is going to be how HarperCollins handles that going forward. As you know very well, most book publishing imprints operate as business-facing. You know, consumers generally don't develop loyalty to imprints, with a few arguable exceptions. No one says, you know, boy, I really love Little Brown Books. For the most part, some do. But Harlequin really does have that consumer-facing brand. So it's going to be interesting for me to see what Harper does with that and how maybe it informs their business going forward, because we're always talking about in the future how publishers need to become more business-to-consumer focused. So that was the big deal that we learned about in the last week. But also this week, Harper bought a Bible imprint and recorded books by Highbridge Audio, and there were a few other smaller deals among indies as well. So, you know, after the big Random Penguin merger, the thought was that we'd see more deals and more consolidation in the industry. And you have to wonder if this is going to be the start of that cycle. And you have to wonder, too, if this is what it's going to look like, if these sort of verticals are going to be the way to go, like romance. And another observation I'll make in the Harlequin deal comes back to one of our favorite topics of the last year or two, which is 50 Shades of Grey. I think 50 Shades of Grey really sort of exposed a real upside for the romance genre and for erotica. And it's going to be interesting to see if Harper can use its muscle in the market to, you know, strike gold there with Harlequin titles. If so, this deal could be a really huge winner for them.
Wow. More 50 Shades of Grey titles. Imagine that. Well, you know, speaking of verticals, PW has a feature coming on a vertical that many see as embattled, rightly or wrongly, and that is library reference. So from erotica to library reference, Andrew.
Yeah, kind of a quick pivot there, but absolutely. And it really is sort of a fascinating subject. You know, for the last decade, more than a decade, really, the narrative in the reference market has been that it's, you know, well, you know, dead for the most part. The open web and Google and Wikipedia, well, they've all killed library reference. But in reality, reference publishers have been really aggressively embracing their digital futures. And part of this is probably because they were faced with death. They had no choice but to embrace their digital future, or they were going to die off. But there have been a slew of new products and resources and services, and reference librarians have been very innovative in adapting their new services. They're no longer just sitting behind desks. They're out amongst their users, really trying to sort of drum up usage for their services. You know, I look at this and I think, boy, if trade publishers were only as aggressive as reference publishers are in seizing their digital future, where would the ebook market be right now? But still, for reference publishers, this reference is dead trope persists. And you know, in my piece in Monday's issue, I argue that changing that narrative, that reference is dead, may be one of reference's biggest challenges. As you know, narratives really have power, and the longer that, you know, reference is dead is out there as a narrative, the more people are going to believe it. So there's a real sort of marketing challenge out there for libraries. And part of this challenge, I think, is to better measure outcomes from reference. You know, reference is no longer about just answering questions. It's actually more about framing questions, helping users decide where they're going to find their best information. And it's really about helping users change their lives with that information, what they're going to do with that information. And that's the kind of value outcomes that can't really be measured via gay counts or question counts or all the statistical measures that libraries have traditionally relied on. So that's going to be a real challenge going forward. But without question, there's more powerful resources available now than ever before in references history. Training users how to use those products and to actually know that they're there is going to be a real challenge, especially with a little company in Mountain View called Google that's made a killing with its little single simple white search box on a blank page.
Well, indeed, really good points there. I look forward to reading that piece. And another piece that I look forward to checking out this week in Publishers Weekly looks at the Common Core State Standards, which have gone from being a sort of a quiet emerging story in the education side of the world to really quite a controversial part of it. And you've got a column on that.
Yes, that is right. And I know that you at the Copyright Clearance Center have been involved in following the Common Core quite a bit as well, and with good reasons. I think it has real implications for a huge part of the publishing market as new resources are used and to support education. But in Monday's issue, our Common Core columnists, Rose Luna and Margot Del Judas, take a real hard look at how librarians are coping with the controversy that the core has generated out there. As you know, the standards have been embroiled in controversies across the country, generating debate from angry parents to education experts. And public librarians especially, school librarians too, have especially been caught in the middle here because they want to support the education initiatives in the Common Core, and they want to support their schools and parents, but they're sort of caught in the middle as the core sort of devolves into this controversy. It's been a frustrating and complicated endeavor so far. And in Monday's issue, our columnists reveal some more results of a survey that they did amongst librarians to find out where the pressure points are in that transition. So it's an issue that we're going to be following quite closely in the future. And in Monday's issues, our readers can learn more whether they're interested as librarians or as parents or as publishing people looking to supply resources into this new educational market. They can learn a little bit more about where the pressure points are for libraries in this sort of difficult Common Core transition.
Well, you say if everyone is interested, everyone should be interested. After all, this is about the future of the country when it comes right down to it. When we educate our children, we're sort of preparing ourselves for the next generation. So, Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.